Please silence all electronic devices.
Well, we took a different path. I would say close to half of my cabinet was African-American. I made more, way more African-American appointments than anybody in history.
Looking back on it now, all these many years later, do you wish you had pardoned the sentences of the Wilmington 10?
Any further discussion or debate?
From the bunker of sweatshirts in northern Wake County, welcome back to the WNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. On this episode, a conversation with former Governor Jim Hunt. He was first elected governor in 1976 at the age of just 39. Hunt became the first incumbent ever eligible for another term, and he won re-election in 1980. A Democrat, Hunt lost a U.S. Senate bid to Jesse Helms in 84, and then later went on to win two additional terms as governor in 1992 and 96. He has long been a proponent of early childhood education, and his political legacy is fundamentally tied to public schools. Simply put, Hunt has been a fixture in North Carolina politics for almost half a century. These days, you can find the 83-year-old former four-term governor on his cattle farm in Wilson County. That's where he was when we recently spoke over the phone. And, like the rest of us, he's navigating life during a pandemic.
I'd say the biggest change has been that we're not going a lot of places and seeing a lot of people that we used to. And when we go, even to church, there are not many there. And we space out. In fact, our church meets out in the yard next to the church building.
If you don't mind me asking, have you been wearing a mask with frequency?
Everywhere we go. And I am very impressed. Remember, I live in eastern North Carolina, a pretty rural area.
While Hunt has been maintaining social distance for several months, he hasn't kept much space from North Carolina politics. Early on in our conversation, I asked him when he last spoke with current governor, Roy Cooper.
No, two or three days ago, we talked pretty often. Not every day, of course, but we think so much alike in terms of our great support for education and economic development and jobs and just basic decency.
You were, I believe, in between your 2 8-year stints as governor when Governor Cooper was first elected to the North Carolina General Assembly. Do you recall your first meeting with him or when you got to know him?
I knew him before that. He is from Nash County,
right,
which is adjoining my county of Wilson. I've known his family. I knew his father. I knew his mother. She was a co-manager of my campaign for governor one time. She was a school teacher, and she believed so strongly in what we were pushing to improve schools and put in kindergarten and early childhood and raise teacher pay. So I've known his whole family.
Governor Cooper has received a lot of praise, and certainly some criticism over these past few months. But, you know, in his own words and the words of his supporters, he has had to make a lot of hard decisions. I think that this would have been a tough path for any governor to navigate. From your perspective, what perhaps could Governor Cooper have done differently these past 4.5 months?
I honestly don't know of anything he could have done better. And that's saying a lot coming from me now. You know, I was the first 2-term governor and the only 4-term governor. I know what's involved in being governor, and I know how hard it is and how challenging it is, but what great possibilities you have as governor. And Governor Cooper has been such a good leader.
So, Governor Hunt, let me push back a little bit, because surely he hasn't done a perfect job. Perfection is ever elusive, a mirage, perhaps. Where has he not been perfect in the last 4.5 or 5 months?
Well, nobody's perfect.
Well, I know that's why I'm asking the question.
But his challenge has been that Republican legislature that has not been willing to do some basic things that this state needs. They have not been willing to raise teacher pay the way that we ought to get and keep good teachers. They've not been willing to stay committed to the early childhood programs and the reading program I put in once.
We could, I think, probably no doubt spend half an hour or 45 minutes or 3 hours talking about education, both some of your efforts as a governor for 16 years and also what you think needs to be done now. I want to chat about one of the other major stories playing out right now. It's being viewed as a reckoning, the race relations story, the criminal justice calls for reform. For me, as I have these conversations, it's important for me to be thinking about where people are coming from as we discuss these issues. You're a native North Carolinian. You're now in your 80s. And I want to, for a moment, drift back to high school. You were a basketball captain, quarterback of the football team, I believe, if I've done my research right. And those were, of course, all-white teams at an all-white school. And schools were still segregated here at that time, separate but equal, or so you thought, right?
They weren't equal. They were separate. But the African-American schools were not equal. They didn't get equal funding. They didn't have, of course, their children didn't have an equal chance before they got there. I remember the days when even in a segregated school, I was told and found out that the black children in the black schools had the old textbooks that the white children had already gone through. And I'll tell you, we had some great teachers in those black schools, but we did not have equal education. So that decision to eliminate segregation in the schools was one of the great decisions that's ever been made in the history of America. And let me tell you what I'm seeing nowadays. I'm seeing, and I saw it in certainly, of course, brought back to us in the activities around John Lewis's funeral. I knew John Lewis, thought the world of him. He was a friend. But I am now seeing something that is amazing to me and good for North Carolina and America. I am seeing people beginning in a new way to recognize the evils of discrimination and the potential in African Americans and Hispanic people to do well and to be successful if they're treated right and given an opportunity. And I see it as an exciting thing that this is happening. But it is now a time, and my grandchildren have been walking in some of these Black Lives Matter parades and so forth. I'm so proud to see them recognizing what's right and wrong and being willing to stand up for the right. And it is beginning to permeate our society. Even here in North Carolina, which is a pretty conservative state, it's spreading out, not just in the big cities, in the smaller cities, and even in the rural areas. This something is happening now, folks, that people are aware of, and North Carolina is not immune to it.
No, not at all. There's obviously a complicated equation as we think about bureaucracy. There's the executive branch, the legislative branch, occasionally that check from the judicial branch. There's the state government. There are local municipalities. But specific to you and your administrations, I'm wondering where you wish you had achieved more. If there's something that perhaps, you know, knowing what you do know now, seeing some of the struggles as we think about ethnic disparities in our state, where do you wish you had maybe taken a different path?
Well, we took a different path. I would say close to half of my cabinet was African-American. I made way more African-American appointments than anybody in history. And we really pushed at it every day. But I still wish we'd done more. And I wish we'd found ways to institutionalize it so it would continue. But, you know, the people get to vote. And they voted for some people in public office that have not seen that as real important and have not followed that path of trying to push for and to institutionalize equality. And you mainly do that with education, by the way. Again, this makes the point that these young people being so moved by recent events and the Black Lives Matter issue is really, again, it's a new awakening, so to speak. You know, we had the death of Martin Luther King. And then we had the leadership of John L. Lewis and others.
I want to ask you about a saga that played out before your administration and then during your administration. It's known colloquially as the Wilmington 10.
Hey, this is producer Charlie Shelton Orman, and I'm just going to jump in real quick to give a bit of context around what Jeff just mentioned, the group known as the Wilmington 10. So in the late 60s and early 70s, race relations in Wilmington were really tense, and things hit a boiling point around school integration and the treatment of African-American students at historically white schools. In 1971, racial tensions came to a head when a white-owned grocery store in a predominantly black neighborhood was firebombed. Tensions escalated and the National Guard was called into the city. 9 African-American men and 1 white woman were arrested and later convicted for their alleged involvement. The majority of the Wilmington 10 were young men, high schoolers, at the time of their arrest. But in 1980, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a new trial and overturned the conviction after the group had already spent years in prison. The court ruled the district attorney had committed prosecutorial misconduct, including bribing some of the witnesses. Governor Hunt reduced their sentence in 1978, but refused to pardon them. The Wilmington 10 were eventually pardoned by Governor Bev Perdue in 2012. Okay, I'm going to toss it back over to Jeff.
There were 10 people who were ultimately wrongfully convicted for their role in some protests that played out in Wilmington. And during your time in office, there was a lot of pressure on you to commute or pardon the sentences of the Wilmington 10. For your part, you reduced their sentences. Looking back on it now, all these many years later, do you wish you had pardoned the sentences of the Wilmington 10?
No, I do not, because I had reason, and I had good reason to know that maybe all of those, I assume all of those, of the Wilmington 10 were involved in illegal activities. And for that reason, I had information at that time that they had done that. And that's the reason I did not pardon them. I reduced their sentence. I didn't pardon them because I thought they had done something wrong. But the truth is that the way that people were treated in Wilmington, going all the way back to the beginning of the 19th century, when they had the overthrow of the city of Wilmington, mayor and city government, many, many bad things were being done in that area. People were being mistreated, and I'm glad that we now have gotten past that, and we need to learn from all of it. And also, I understand why a lot of people have been out in the streets demonstrating and so forth. I'm all the more pleased that we are now coming together and seeing the broad picture.
Governor Jim Hunt here on the WONC Politics Podcast. He's a Democrat who grew up in Wilson County, North Carolina, elected in 1976 and 1980. He was then elected again in 1992 and 1996. An interesting trivia note, he is tied for the 4th longest gubernatorial tenure in post-constitutional U.S. history. Another way of saying that is that there are 3 people who have served as governor longer than Governor Hunt. And my question to you, sir, is can you name any of them or all of them?
Well, I suspect that one of them may be the recent governor of Iowa, who is now the U.S. ambassador to China. And he's a friend of mine, by the way, because I helped teach him about education and what we've done in North Carolina. Not sure who the other ones are.
Yeah. So those three, and I'm going to go rapid fire here in a moment. I want to just see if we can push through a couple more topics and try to be respectful of your time. I know you're busy. You probably have a call with the governor that you need to get on. Get off with me. So those three governors who, the only three in American history who have served longer than you, Governor Branstad, Terry Branstad from Iowa, a Republican who you mentioned, Governor Bill Janklow from South Dakota, a Republican, and Governor George Wallace from Alabama, a Democrat. And interestingly, all three of them at times overlapped with you during your administration, which I just thought was interesting. Okay, so I'm going to go just rapid fire here. I want to just tick through a couple of other things. I'll start with one that's perhaps not one you'd love to talk about, but in 1984, you ran for the U.S. Senate. It was a race you ultimately lost to Jesse Helms, who was at the time a two-term GOP incumbent of the U.S. Senate. And I'm wondering if there is a morsel, a lesson from defeat, something that you will share with Cal Cunningham or that you already have shared with Cal Cunningham as he tries to knock off a Republican incumbent here in 2020.
I would say from that 1984 Senate race, I just thought it was something that I was morally bound to do. But he was a very clever campaigner. And he sure knew how to pick some, find some ways to pick some faults in people. And I was not aware of how his negative campaigns were going to work and how they were going to do it and how they were going to get to people's feelings and stir them up, including his fight against Martin Luther King and so forth. And then, of course, it was a year when Ronald Reagan ran for president. And I think, as I recall, 3 out of every 4 white people in the state voted for him. And there weren't many African Americans voting at that time. So he just beat me. I think if I'd run against him again later, I would have won. But I don't spend my time worrying about that. And by the way, he had done some worthy things in his life. As a person, he treated people nicely, I think, in the main. But he was not a force for goodness and fairness and equality. And he appealed to prejudice and that kind of thing. That's not what North Carolina needs.
Well, I was going to ask you next, what did you really think of Jesse Helms? But I think you just told me. So I don't think I necessarily need to ask you that, unless you want to add to that in any way.
I think you've got it.
Yeah, I think I do. And it sounds like your piece of advice for Cal Cunningham might have been don't run against Jesse Helms, which he can check off the list here. I read that you hitchhiked to Iowa to see your then-girlfriend, now your longtime wife. Did you seriously hitchhike to Iowa? Is that true?
I did hitchhike to Iowa every chance I got. I'll tell you how serious it was.
Please.
We both grew up on a farm, she and I, me in eastern North Carolina. We grew up in an organization called The Grange. You've heard of the Farm Bureau.
Of course.
Another organization called The Grange. That's the one we grew up in. So she was a National Grange youth leader, and I was president of the Grange youth in North Carolina. I met her at a national conference in Hamilton, Ohio, and I was bowled over. In fact, after a 3-day conference, I came back home, and my mother always said that I said I'd met the girl I was going to marry. Well, the truth was, I was a student at NC State. And so every holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter vacation, instead of coming home to the farm in eastern North Carolina, I thumbed to Iowa to see that girl.
Governor Jim Hunt, his wife Carolyn, and he have been married for 63 years. If I've got it right, they have 4 children, 10 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. He was the 69th and the 71st governor of North Carolina. And today, he still keeps up with the governor occasionally. Sounds like a couple of phone calls a week. Governor Jim Hunt, I appreciate the time. I'm sorry to keep you for so long, but I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you. And I hope this is going to be a year that we're going to go forward and decide we're going to be a strong, ambitious, fair state and country and make this world the kind of place it ought to be. We can do it.
Jim Hunt, 4-term governor of North Carolina. Thanks for tapping play on this latest long-form episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast. Charlie Shelton Orman produced this episode and filled you in on some context about the Wilmington 10. You can find Charlie on Twitter at Chuck Shelton, S-H-E-L-T-O-N, 1-4. We'll drop our next politics pod on Friday when we review some of what happened in the week in state politics. Mitch Kokai is in for Becky Gray. Rob Schofield, of course, part of that review as well. Until then, for Charlie and Governor Jim Hunt, I'm Jeff Tiberi.